speaker. We have Sarah Espinoza. Sarah, I hope I'm saying your name right.
Yeah, that's right.
She has been on our call just a couple months ago to talk about a course that they're developing. And now it's been developed and it's online. So Sarah, do you want to go through it a little bit?
Yeah, and I'll actually be very brief. I just have a couple of slides. But as Eva mentioned, I'm with the National Environmental Education Foundation. And we have been working for several years now to create environmental education materials for broadcast meteorologists that are tied to weather reporting but sort of extend to other environmental science concepts. And as part of that effort, we have been working with an organization called the Cooperative Program for Operational Meteorology Education and Training, which is also known as COMET. They are part of the University Corporation for Atmospheric Research out in Boulder, to develop a series of short online environmental education courses that are tied to the weather. And what we found is that despite the fact that these were designed originally for TV meteorologists, they're really great resources and sort of topic primers for anyone who's interested. So I just wanted to quickly introduce the Weather in the Built Environment course, which we've just released about 2 months ago now, to this group as something that may be interesting to you or some of your constituencies. It's free, it's online, and it's highly interactive. It's really designed for busy professionals. So it's broken down into short units and even shorter lessons that you can walk away from and come back to as you would like. This second slide just outlines the main topics that are covered in this course. We go over past and current U.S. growth trends, sort of how have suburban and city areas changed and how are they projected to change in the future. And then the second two units of the course focus on how weather and the built environment relate. So the second unit really focuses on wet weather. How does increased pavement increase flooding in a city, and how might that impact local water quality? And then the third unit focuses in mostly on urban heat island effects and a little bit on air quality sources and conditions. The whole course takes about an hour to work through. All of the graphics that are in here are copyright cleared, so they're available for your use. And we're actually working on also putting these into podcasts so that they could be downloaded to an iPod or into iTunes as well. So I'm happy to answer any content questions, but as I said, I just wanted to very briefly bring this to your attention. The link to access the course is on this last slide. It's free. You do have to register with COMET, but that is also free and really available to anyone who will find it useful.
Thanks, Sarah. Questions? Anyone? Well, I guess with that, we can maybe start with going around with any updates. To keep this kind of organized, I was thinking maybe if you have an update, you can just show through the feedback to presenter indicator, like maybe change your color from green to purple, as if you had a question, and then I'll call on you. But I know for an update, I was going to ask Jim Yarbrough from Region 6 to talk a little bit about their work doing, just to kind of kick off the update process.
Okay, Eva. Yeah, just very briefly, I think my colleagues, Kevin LeFave from the City of Dallas, and David Hitchcock from the Houston Advanced Research Center, and Holly Wilson from OAQPS are on, if I'm reading that correctly from the participants. So please chime in. But very briefly, the City of Dallas, the North Central Texas Council of Governments, and EPA are working together on something called the Dallas Sustainable Skylines Initiative. We have seven projects that we're trying to complete within a three-year period. One of those projects is focused on urban heat island and stormwater mitigation. And The Houston Advanced Research Center is under contract through EBA's office to provide really a look at the critical areas of urban heat island influence and impermeable pavements in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And based upon David's work at HARC, which is going to be finished, I understand, pretty soon, the initiative is going to sponsor a rollout to the private sector, really with three foci. One, reforestation to address some regional aspects of the heat island, and then number two and three, reflective roofs and reflective pavements. And along those lines, we've been really fortunate that the Texas Trees Foundation has really stepped up to work with the City of Dallas, in as well as the Urban Forestry Advisory Council to the City of Dallas to help sponsor a very interesting one-day event that's going to sort of accompany David's report rollout. And I guess, David, that's supposed to be in June at this point.
We hope so.
Yeah.
Need it to be a lot hotter than it is here right now, though.
Right, right. And then we'll have similar rollouts to focus on reflective roofs and reflective pavements. And regarding pavements, we've been encouraged that several local industries and industry associations have stepped up and have indicated that they would like to take part in this rollout and perhaps later on in the year sponsor a seminar to talk about all different kinds of cool pavement options for the Dallas area. So anyway, that's taking off, and we're encouraged that the private sector is responding.
Thanks, Jim. Does anyone have questions for Jim?
Yeah, Jim, it's Demetra again. Sorry to jump in there, Ava. Because you've connected the Urban Heat Island to stormwater mitigation, is it right to assume that the reflective pavements are all or some pervious?
Yeah, in fact, we are looking at cool permeable pavements. And so far, the industries that have indicated an interest are representing different products, but very permeable concrete pavements are one option. Even grass pavers are another that may be featured at the seminar later in the year. So we're not just focusing on one, but I think we're looking at various options that can be presented to the private sector to look at cost as well, because as has been explained in Texas, we don't have necessarily the demand yet to force down the cost for some of these alternative pavements, as might be the case in California.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Actually, I was going to ask someone from Dallas, or maybe David, who could you talk a little bit about the building code and cool roofs? I didn't have a chance to read through the recent adoption, but just even a line or two about what's going on there.
Okay, there are a couple of building code changes. Well, there are a lot of building code changes going on in both the City of Dallas and the City of Houston. The City of Dallas, not just the cool roof provisions that are in there, but the Dallas code is incorporating a lot of LEED related standards, and LEED contains not only references to roofing, but also to other development characteristics that include heat island mitigation. The Houston code has been changed to specifically incorporate cool roofs, and there's a series of other changes that are being reviewed tonight in a meeting with the city's code committee.
So have those already been adopted?
The cool roof?
Yeah.
The cool roof change has been adopted. The first phase in Dallas, their green building ordinance changes have been adopted as well.
Okay, great.
Hi, this is Kevin from the City of Dallas. David's right. We about 2 or 3 weeks ago, our City Council and Mayor approved the green building ordinance, and it'll be a two-phase project. So basically, everything that will be built in the City of Dallas, the first phase goes in 2009, the second phase 2012, and after that point, everything built will have to meet certain green standards. And that's not just city or municipal buildings. It's also residential, commercial, remodels, everything.
Oh, wow. that's huge, yeah.
Yes.
Can I ask, but it's not requiring cool roofs. It's using that as an option to comply? Is that,
right. There's, it's more of a menu to where developers or people, you know, doing remodels can choose from a punch list of options, you know, meeting a certain amount of points in different areas, energy consumption, water usage, things like that, landscape, et cetera, to, you have to get a certain amount of points in order to, it's kind of based on the LEED. And it basically it comes down to it needs to be certifiable.
Okay.
But it's not, it's not hard and fast, because obviously you can't, you know, some people don't have as many resources as others, so they can't, you know, dictate directly what they have to have. It's just they've given them multiple options from each area, and they have to pick, you know, two or three in order to hit a certain amount of points for each area.
Okay, great. And will you have any grant? Will the city be like providing any grants or any kind of technical assistance or to help people comply with the code changes?
At this point, I could not answer that question accurately. I don't believe we are, but I can certainly try and find out a little bit more clear of an answer.
Okay. Thanks, Kevin. Mm-hmm. That's helpful. It's good news. I don't see any people indicating that they have an update. So I guess we will be coming to a close. I want to tell everyone who's on the phone that this will be my last webcast. I'm very sorry to say that. I'm going to be leaving the EPA this summer to move to Uganda because my husband has received a new position there with the World Bank. He's an environmental specialist as well. So we'll be moving over there for about 3 years, and I do hope that this program will continue, and we're working on finding a replacement. So I am not actually going to, you know, leave until towards the end of June. So I do hope that you'll send me recommendations for webcast topics you continue to like to hear about, so that I have some material to hand over to this next person to keep this program going. I also want to note, I know we said that the Urban Heat Island Compendium would be up soon, and it is pretty much, you know, a couple of the chapters are already done, but we thought it made the most sense to actually post it when we post the revamped website. And that's taking a bit longer to actually change all the web pages, and even in the revised webcast call page, I noticed that there were some errors, so I apologize for that, and it's just, it's a whole process, so we're continuing to evolve that and fix that, but the webcast page, which now posts the PowerPoints and the recordings and kind of organizes the presentations by topic, which I thought would be a lot more helpful and useful than by the date that the webcast or conference call was given, that will be, as I was saying, kind of tweaked and refined a bit more, but always open to suggestions if you, you know, have any. So I do see one purple indicator light. So Art, do you want to provide an update of some sort?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi, Eva. I'm sorry to hear that you're moving on, but congratulations and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Yes, I wanted to provide an update. The city of Chamblee, Georgia, which is on the northeast side of Atlanta, became the first city in Georgia to adopt a LEED based green building requirement for private developments as well as public developments. That will take place, or that will take effect April 1st, 2009. So they decided to include a little more flexibility and allow a Green Globes certification or a LEED basic level certification. But one or the other will be required for private developments over 20,000 square feet, as well as all future city projects.
can I ask, is that for commercial buildings, or is it also, does that also apply to residential?
Well, it applies to residential, multifamily, and mixed use, and commercial, but it's just a size threshold. So anything meeting that size threshold will have to be LEED certified. Of course, you could build a smaller apartment complex, you know, 5 units or whatever, and you wouldn't have to meet that requirement.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
It's a start. We're starting to get some favorable publicity, as well as some inquiries from developer organizations and contractors who want to learn more about LEED and what they'll have to do. In the state of Georgia, Department of Community Affairs is beginning to participate more in discussions about how LEED and LEED principles could be incorporated into building codes and model ordinances and so forth. So it's a slow process.
But it's in the right direction. So
yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I see that Jeff King has
same lines here in the D.C. region. The Council of Governments, which represents a lot of the local jurisdictions in the region, and the Intergovernmental Green Building group that we have here, endorsed adopting LEED for at least government buildings, and we've already seen a couple of our counties starting to take action. I think Loudoun County and Montgomery County have each put in some changes to their code that include requirements for LEED, and so that's something that's happened in the last couple of months.
That's great.
The only other thing I can say is we also just had a meeting in our SIP, on our 8-hour ozone SIP. We did have a tree canopy heat island component, which committed us to pulling together a group to start a kind of a canopy management initiative. That we held our first meeting in the last month or so. And on a parallel track, we have our climate change steering committee also thinking about land use and the tree canopy. I think in the case of the foresters, there is some discussion of trying to promote a 5% increase in canopy, which is a long way from where we are now. The climate change steering committee is a little less aggressive, and they're shooting for a no net loss. But we'll see how all that plays out.
And Jeff, can I just clarify? You guys, what kind of tree inventory data do you have? What have you done a recent analysis so that you can track that?
Well, I think 5%? That was part of the part of the effort of the first meeting was to kind of sit around the table with the foresters from Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, as well as some other stakeholders in the U.S. Forest Service, to kind of come up with, so you know, what data sets do we have? What do we need? Where are we going to get it? The District of Columbia actually has a pretty robust database. I think they pretty much have inventoried all the street trees in the city. But at this point, I don't think we really have a good handle on the total canopy, and that's part of the discussion with this work group, is to get a sense of where we need to take it.
Okay, great.
Hey, Jeff, did you say you're taking SIP credit for the urban canopy changes?
No, not yet. No, it's in our SIP as a voluntary measure. No SIP credit at this point, you know, given where we're at. But
okay.
I don't know. Yeah, Kevin, do you still do? You, okay, go ahead.
I wanted to follow up. I actually have got an answer already. I emailed one of the leads on our green building project, and she said that the task force actually will have a group of members that will be working specifically on incentives and grants.
Oh, great!
And currently, our housing department has a program in place for affordable housing, and that we're also planning to request grants from a couple different enterprises. So our intent is to have assistance during phase one of the program. So I was incorrect in my original assessment. And as far as guidance and training, our Office of Environmental Quality, they're looking to try and incorporate a green office as one of our functions at the Office of Environmental Quality to develop a training program for developers and builders.
Wow. Well, that'll be...
We've got a little bit of time before that goes, but it'll definitely be interesting to see.
Well, that'll be good to keep on, you know, kind of keep tabs on, and I'm sure it's a lesson learned or, you know, a good peer exchange type presentation in the future. So.
Yes.
Well, thank you, everyone. And again, I want to encourage you to please, you know, email me webcast topics that you'd be interested in hearing about in the future. And I'll send forwarding information before I leave. So hopefully we'll keep in contact with some of you. So thank you, and bye-bye.